You are listening to the Glass Cannon Network, the premier source for role-playing game entertainment. Welcome to Cannon Fodder, a behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Network.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to Cannon Fodder. It is Wednesday, July 24th, 2024, and I'm your old pal, Joey O'Brien.
And I'm Troy Vanilla Thunder LaValle.
Vanilla Thunder. Is that the name of the coffee that you're drinking right now?
No, that would be delicious, though, if it had a little vanilla. It's just Black Dunkin's.
Just Black Dunkin's.
That was my other nickname.
Oh, Troy Vanilla Black Thunder. Vanilla Thunder sounded like a really good coffee.
It does sound fun, or maybe like an energy drink.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah, have you like tried that. Vanilla Thunder? That's their new one.
Gotta get yourself some Vanilla Thunder. We are back with the FOD. Very excited to hang with you guys today and talk about what's going on around here, around these parts. Troy and I just wrapped up like an hour-long business meeting. A lot of exciting irons in the fire.
Dude, that was 90 minutes.
Was that 90?
Yeah.
That flew by. It's always exciting talking about the future and fun stuff happening. We'll cover some of that today as we talk about the next couple weeks, which are going to be jam-packed for everybody here at the Glass Cannon Network and for a lot of you as well as we come up on San Diego Comic-Con and Gen Con. Of course, we'll talk about the Glass Cannon podcast for a little bit. A brief We Are Stupid with a visual aid. Spoilers. And finally, some listener mail, as always. Notes from the Nash. We'd love to speak back to you guys. So, we're going to start off really just talking about Comic-Con. It's Comic-Con week. It's a big week, something that was never on our radar before.
Nope.
Years ago, we would never go. And now, a couple years in a row here, we're leaving tomorrow. We fly to San Diego. So, how you feeling? You excited?
Fast.
You prepped? You ready?
But what is this comes out on Wednesday? Yes, I'm prepped.
Nice.
Last year at this time, I was so strung out, as we always are, leading up to Gen Con. But I remember last year I had my little board with all the shit that I had to do. And it was just, I couldn't see the forest through trees. And I remember hitting Sunday at 4 and just like collapsing. And I did it. And this year I'm like, I'm not doing that again. I want to be much more prepared. And just with little changes that I've been making throughout the year, it's kind of happened naturally. And so I feel good. I'm not stressed. I'm excited. I think that it would be great if this wasn't the week before Gen Con that we were going
to
San Diego.
Yeah.
Just for my family that I'm leaving 2 weeks in a row. But it'll be fun, man. It's going to be a whirlwind. It's going to be fun to do some other things too, because we're doing the Marvel Multiverse 7:30 p.m. Or 7:30 p.m. Pacific on Friday. But then I'm doing a panel Saturday morning on just sort of like actual play in general. Hopefully, maybe catch some new fans from that. And then I'm going to be on Faster Purple Worm with a character that I came up with that I'm really, really excited about.
Oh, cool.
I've never seen it done before. I'm sure it has been done, but I was like, what the hell am I going to do for a character? I was like, oh, I've got a fun
concept. Can you tell us about it? I mean, can you tease it? It's not like anybody's ever going to see this, right? Is it being filmed?
No, it's not being filmed. My idea was I wanted it to be this sort of like yuppie prep school boy whose parents didn't think he like amounted to anything. And so he's like, I'll show them. And he goes off and like tries to live lean without his parents' influence. So he's a barbarian. So he's a barbarian that's like really like an overprivileged kid. But he's like, I'm a barbarian now. I don't know how he's going to, what his voice is going to be. But I'm like, I love this idea because I really wanted to play a barbarian. But it's like, I don't want to be like,
Yeah, the classic barbarian. Yeah.
So he's like a barbarian. He's just roughing it. He's a first level barbarian. So he's like literally just roughing it. He's going to die by the end of it.
He's slumming it. That's great. Yeah. He's going to go off to prove himself. And we all know he's going to die, which is very funny. Very funny way to go into Faster.
I'll show them.
Work. Yeah. So anyway, exciting stuff coming for San Diego Comic-Con. I hope that you're there and can join us. If this is the first you're hearing about it and you can be there, just get there and come hang out and see the show. We're playing Marvel Multiverse role-playing games, so very much looking forward to that. As far as content that's coming out this week on the Glass Cannon, already released a character creation sample from the new Welcome to Night Vale RPG, which I know people are very excited about. Welcome to Night Vale is going to is coming to Backerkit as an RPG, to develop an RPG in the fall. And we get a little sample taste of the game. So we got some character creation with Jared and Matthew, and then going into a full one-shot session that'll air during Gen Con. So that's really exciting. So that's already on our YouTube if you want to check out the character creation sample of what it looks like to build a character in the weird world of Night Vale. And then Pendragon. Pendragon continues. If you didn't catch it, last Friday night we did character creation. This Friday night, 8 o'clock Eastern, we're going to premiere part one of this story. I've already recorded it. It's awesome. So I really can't wait for you guys to see it / listen to it. And where can they listen to it? On there's a Gen Con feed now, right?
Gen Con recordings. Gen Con feed. Yeah, it used to be Gen Con pop-up recording studio on our premium subscription service. Now it's been rebranded to just Gen Con recordings where these are pre-recorded. But man, that thing is going to be – it's already chock full of content. But by the end of Gen Con, it's going to be loaded with another let's see, 8 times 3, 24 plus for like another 30 hours of content. But yeah, man,
like one weekend, you're going to get like 30 hours of content on this one podcast feed.
And so much stuff. I mean, we've recorded like probably 80% of it at this point. And man, there are some hits. I'm having like Pendragon FOMO, but I'm excited to see what you guys do with it.
Yeah, I'm really excited for everybody to get a chance to watch and listen to it. It's just so much freaking fun. I had this idea and I was like, pardon me. I don't know when we could put this together or how we could put it together, but the way that Pendragon lines up its character creation and the way the game plays, you remember this vaguely from last year's Gen Con, where the primary traits that you have are all sort of like two ends of a spectrum.
Yeah.
So it always totals up to 20, your scores, for every one of these like polarizing features. And it'll be like, are you
20? I thought it was 100.
No, it adds up to 20 because it's a D20 system, but like Cthulhu, it's a roll under system.
Yeah.
So if your score is 11, that means you need to roll 11 or less on a D20 in order to succeed. And so, yes, you remember these traits. There's like generous to selfish. You know, there's like temperate to indulgent. There's there's spiritual to... I can't remember what the other side was, earthly or something. I can't remember. Worldly, something like that. Anyway, they're valiant to cowardly, right? So there's all these you know, lines of spectrum, basically, of where your character stands. And I was like, it would be really funny if we made these for ourselves, like for our actual personalities. You know what I mean? Like, where it is, what trait is Matthew most famous for? You know, like among these traits, because being famous for means you have a 16 or higher in that trait. So anyway, it just cracked me up because it's like, it makes it so fun to role play, like to be outside of combat, which you are most of the time. It makes it so fun to role play because you're rolling dice to see how you act in a situation. And and you don't always have to roll. You can just do whatever you want. But then like you can tick your box in certain areas and move things as you develop your character. Anyway, it's a blast.
Well, yeah, I don't know if we talked about this on the stream, but I didn't realize you guys are playing the beginning of the Grey Knight scenario. And this was like an old scenario that's been updated. And it was written by Larry Dottillo, who did Massive Nyarlathotep. And I was like, oh, man, if I'd known that, I would have done Pendragon. That sounds so cool. Because I didn't realize there's this like other element. When Brian ran it for us, obviously he had Merlin, but the magic part of it was like, it was obscure. I thought it was pretty much, you know, sword and board with like an element of sorcery that could be explained away. But it sounds like with the Grey Knight, no, there's like real magic in this world. And like, I was like, oh shit, I thought of Pendragon in a whole new way when I started reading about this Grey Knight scenario.
Yeah, I did not see it coming. It's really awesome. And also Brian Holland from Chaosium is very clear about Pendragon being a very... you play it the way your table wants to play it. You can make it as mystical or as grimdark or gritty as you want. You can have elements of magic. You can have no magic. It's really up to you how you want to approach your game.
I love that.
He likes a little bit of a grittier style game, but it does definitely have mystical elements to it. And so it's very interesting to play these like hard scrabble knights in this medieval setting that you start out believing is, you know, just kind of quote unquote historically accurate, which by the way, we have a good laugh about, but is, but then when magic enters into it, you're like, holy crap, how would these people react to the idea of mystical things happening. It's made it. I cannot wait for you guys to see where this story goes. It's just so awesome. And to me, I'm like, I just want to get more Pendragon in my life.
Yeah.
So that is going to be airing this week. Part one of the actual story airs Friday night. So check that out and you'll be all caught up for when the end of that story or whatever it is, part two, I don't know if it's going to be the end or start of something more, would air during Gen Con on Friday morning at 10 a.m. So anyway, looking forward to that. So, yeah, I mean, that's it for news as far as what's coming in the next week. We got another big kind of can of fodder next week as it's going to be Gen Con week. So we'll be on, you know, we'll be talking all about Gen Con then and we'll get to that at that point. So yeah. How are the shows doing in terms of Call of Cthulhu Live, at least Athenaeum? Is that sold out? Are there still tickets left?
There's 20 as of the time of this recording, which is we're recording this on Monday. There's 21 tickets left. That means we've sold like 340, which would make it one of our largest shows of all time. Come on, 21 tickets at $20 a piece. I'll just buy them.
Yeah, come out and see Call of Cthulhu Live.
Glass Cannon Live at Helium's been sold out forever. They want us to add a second show. I was like, we got enough going on. But I'd say between Blades in the Dark Live, Get in the Trunk Live, which is sold out, Starfinder 2E Live, and the 1920s Call of Cthulhu Live, we've sold on average about 300 plus tickets to each of those shows. Now, Blades in the Dark and Starfinder, those are 400 seat auditoriums, which means there's about 90 tickets left. The Call of Cthulhu one is a 700 seat auditorium, so there's like 400 something tickets left. All those shows are going to be jammed, but please, all the tickets are $14. If you're coming out, bring a friend to one of those shows. I think it's the best way to sort of introduce what we do to people is just come and see us do it live. Some of those casts are huge. I just got the finished scenario from Scott Dorward that I'm going to be running for Call of Cthulhu. It's just wild. I don't know how we're going to do it in under 2 hours, but come on and see us. Pop by the booth. The booth's going to be great. I got some pictures of the build the other day. It's very accurate to what I drew in my little mock-up that I showed on the State of the Nation. It's oddly reminiscent of that. A couple seats left in the gauntlets.
Would we call that odd? I mean, it's what you ordered.
It is, but I was just like, I mean, I literally just had the idea. I drew it, and then that's what it ended up being. Yeah, I can't wait to arrive Wednesday, go in there, and see kind of what it is. I mean, I'll be sent pictures and stuff. I've got videos of the build happening. But there's nothing like going in. And I remember seeing our booth for the first time. And holy shit, this looks like the mock-up. This is amazing.
It's really happening.
I can't wait. I just can't. That's the other thing about like San Diego Comic-Con. I'm excited for it. Excited to have some sick Mexican food and some good beer. Look at some action figures, because that's pretty much all the Comic-Con is. Like, oh, cool, action figures I can't buy. It's in a behind a glass case. I'm like, all right, I've seen Comic-Con. But I'm excited to perform there. But it's kind of getting in the way of my Gen Con excitement, because it is – it's next to Christmas. It's like my favorite thing we do all year. So I can't wait.
Yeah. I mean, talking to the people at Marvel, I mean, they're way worse off than we are, you know, because they it happens to be San Diego Comic-Con right before Gen Con, both of which are enormous for their company, specifically for the Marvel Multiverse role-playing game. So yeah. Our friends at Marvel are just pulling their hair out right now as they launch into this 2 weeks of insanity. But we're excited to be one small part of it. Lots of fun stuff coming from Marvel. All right, let's move on to the Glass Cannon Podcast, Campaign 2, Episode 43, which that's a fun one. Finish off this encounter with the skeletons, wake up inside of this, or not wake up, but start the episode inside of this cavern, piecing through, you know, what's been left behind, including finding a nice little magic crossbow. One of the first magic items we've actually managed to find in this campaign. And then that creates, obviously, a little discussion about who's going to get that. Let me ask you this, just in general. As a GM, as a player, whatever. What's your general feeling? I like to check in on this every once in a while. What's your general feeling on the concept of the roll-off for an item at the average table? Like rolling off for an item two players want. What are your thoughts on that process?
I think it's the fairest way of doing it. I think if a lot of people I've seen the complaints about us in years past is like it just seems antithetical to role play for it. Like someone this is going to be best for. If there's multiple people that want it, rolling off seems to be the most fair way. It's funny, some of these shows we're recording for Gen Con, like we did our Starfinder session the other day, and Deathmatch Island, which I can't wait for people to see. Deathmatch Island has a mechanic in it for like how the
loot
stuff you find is
distributed.
Yeah. And it's not static. You know, the way we did in Starfinder, a little spoiler, is like the captain decides. We found something. It was like, well, who gets this? We're like, well, the captain should decide. And we all were kind of like, yeah, the captain decides, which could lead to some problems. If you got like a captain that's just like, well, I want everything, that could be a real problem. But it worked out for Starfinder.
Bad captain. Bad captain.
Deathmatch Island has a real, I'm interested for people to see this, it has a really cool mechanic where it changes who decides based on, you know, sort of the results of each contest. And I was like, oh, that's a fun way of doing it.
Like a possession arrow in basketball?
Kind of, but like you go through these contests, and contests can mean a bunch of different things. So I'm not really spoiling anything. And at the end of each contest, there is a clear winner, and the winner decides how the loot is distributed. But the next contest, there could be another winner, and they decide. So they can be like, you know what, I'm going to take that and that, and you guys get this. And that's interesting. I don't think it would really work for our group, nor. We don't really have a captain, you know, like in Giant Slayer, there were times when Baron was the leader. There were times when Lork felt like the leader. I think it would have felt weird if one of them just started distributing stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I like the roll-off, but, you know, when you don't win the roll-off, it sucks.
Yeah, I think I don't like it at all. I think it's an imperfect system. It's hard to say what's better, though. I feel like, I guess a lot of the audience, the way you mentioned it before, not a lot of the audience, but the ones that had commented before, I do agree. It's like you should be able to role play out where this goes and how it goes, because anything other than that to me is immersion breaking in a way. It kind of makes it weird. I don't really get it.
And, I get that.
Now, that's largely because I lose every roll off I've ever had. I'm sure that's tainting my opinion on this a little bit. However, I just don't like it. Like as I get older and grumpier, I'm getting like, nah, like if you can't make the decision, then that's a bad group. That's a bad party.
Just be left to like, let's discuss this.
I think so. I'm talking about what I want. I'm not necessarily talking about what's practical. I do think that there would be times when you'd have, you know, a better example is this might, you know, not be, I don't know how this falls in the remaster or whatever, but like the idea of the, something you would get all the time, like Ring of Protection +1. Amulet of Natural Armor +1, like the kind of thing that helps anyone, right? And yeah, you could say the frontline fighters benefit a little bit more, but like Cloak of Resistance, everybody benefits from saving throws. So there's really no way to say it. I like the idea of a character coming to a decision to let another character have it, and that being part of their story. And then also like that character that got it, knowing the next time something comes up, you got to be a little bit more.
It's your turn.
Yeah. It's your turn to give it to somebody else or to pass it off or whatever. I don't know. To me, that just feels more like the story, keeping it in line with the story. I don't like roll-offs. I don't know why. They're starting to bother me. They never used to. But something's irking me about it. I'm like, why can't we just figure out a way to do this, you know, like adults?
Yeah, maybe we rush to the roll-off too often. I think it's Capitacaza. Be like, oh, roll-off?
He loves a roll-off.
Loves a roll-off.
Dude, you just did his face. Exactly. That's what he always does. He's like, roll-off?
Roll-off? It's like, well, can we talk about this? Because there might be something that like comes up that's like, can I have this? I really, really want it. And it's well within everyone's.
This synergizes really well with this thing I have that you didn't know about or whatever. You know, it's like, okay, yeah, you take it. But it is, I know it's tricky. People want their magic items. It's hard to give them up.
Yeah, especially in a low loot campaign.
Yeah.
It's
starving for loot.
Tricky.
Speaking of starving for loot, we're starving for loot so much that the professor, Barnes, who, you know, you're really supposed to feel like is coming into this campaign being like a grounded and very, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? Even keeled and, you know, going to be less erratic than most of us. Comes into this room in this cavern and just like pulls, you know, this magical shield off a wall, triggering an encounter, and then just immediately goes to start killing these things that are like speaking some language, you know, back and forth.
Yeah.
I was pretty surprised. I felt like it crossed over a little bit into this is a weird area, right? Because it's very meta. There's one side of your meta brain is like, and this is me, I'm totally meta at the moment, thinking like, they're speaking a language to each other. The GM is trying to feed to me that, like, these are intelligent creatures that are not necessarily just there to hurt us, but have something else going on, and we just don't understand them, and they're just being defensive, and we're being on the offense. But then there's the other meta, which is like, they're creatures in an encounter in a dungeon. They're there to attack you.
Yeah.
It's built and made for combat. This is a combat encounter. You know, just kind of let it be. So with those kind of things evening out, I defaulted to, well, what would Brother Ramius do? And Ramius hearing the conversation is kind of like, I think I'd like to not, you know, fight this. But it just cracked me up, the idea that, like, nobody had this conversation at all. They just went in and started hacking these leshies to pieces the first chance they got. And so then, of course, I went a little bit overboard describing Brother Ramius's, like, shock and disgust at their murderous ways. Tell me what's going through your head, I guess, from the jump. This does seem, in retrospect, to just be a combat encounter and not really meant to be worked around or diplomatized. That's what my takeaway impression was at the end. They just wanted to eat us, apparently. So,
yeah,
what would have happened if we could have spoken?
But it's a totally skippable encounter. It's kind of meant for you to diplomacy your way out of it.
Oh, okay. Now,
the one change that I made is, like, I didn't want them to speak common. As written, these mushroom leshy or fungus leshy, whatever they were, they speak common. But I'm like, you telling me these mushrooms on Castrovel speak common? No, let's see if they have a way around this. And it made for a lot more interesting role play. And also might make you think differently next time you plan, you know, prep spells. You're like, maybe I should toss in a little comprehend languages just in case. But yeah, it's totally skippable. I thought about not even engaging in combat to just, like, kind of move things along. I've been doing that a lot more with Strange Aeons. It's like, let's go here. But then I was like, no, I'm going to leave it to the players and see what happens here. And your instincts were, I don't want to say correct, but they were kind of in line with what I thought you guys might do.
Oh, wow. You know what? That's the first time hearing that from you. I thought I was 180 off.
No.
I thought you just wanted a fight and you were like, oh my God, like, kind of eye roll, like, O'Brien, can we not drag this out? Can we just kill these things and move on to the next encounter?
Yeah, I almost didn't even prep the encounter. I was like, you know, I'm just going to kind of, like, get through this and we'll have a funny little leshy thing. But then I was like, you know what? No, let's follow their lead and see what they do. And just because of initiative, like, if you had rolled a higher initiative, that would have gone totally differently, I think. Because
it's,
you
also
wouldn't
possible,
have come out.
I can't remember how high Barnes rolled. He rolled higher, but, like, was he highest?
He was highest because he drew first blood.
Yeah, that's what really surprised me.
When you started to complain,
it's
they
really
were like,
Matthew's style.
Yeah, I was surprised. But, you know, people get bloodthirsty. They're like, I want the shield. They're going to not let me keep my new shield. I was a little surprised, but also, like, it goes back to this meta. You just assume, oh, monsters kill. We get a roll for initiative and kill. And I don't know. I'm really trying to lean into providing new solutions out of encounters. And that happened recently in some other encounter. What was it? Might have been for Strange Aeons. I can't remember. Might have been Glass Cannon, where you guys came up with another solution around an encounter. I just think it varies a little bit more to not always have to fight things to the death.
Yeah, I agree. And so just sitting from my chair, like, as a GM, I love it when players take an opportunity to work around combat. I think that it's really fun. There are times when it's like, you know, when you kind of want your players to read the room and you're like, no matter what you do, they're going to fight to the death. Like, let's just keep it moving. But I do appreciate the effort, and I like to reward that effort. We talked a few weeks ago about giving experience for bypassing combat encounters, you know, the same you would get if you killed them. I said that I often do that because I do really appreciate working around encounters in that method. But, you know, you're also motivated by – I'm also motivated slightly by this other meta detail, which is I happened to prepare a spell that was perfect for this exact scenario. Like, I thought that there might be creatures down here that think we're invaders when we're trying to just get information and talk to this elf woman at some point. And so I'm just like, maybe I'll prepare this spell. And it was the perfect spell. It was amazing. And
it
then you
perfect,
rolled
yeah.
right into it, which really worked out well. And I was glad we didn't have to kill them. They're leshies. They're cute. People
they
love
just
leshies.
Wanted to eat something. And I mean, as written in the book, it was like you could bring any of the corpses from the other rooms to, like, bargain with them.
Oh, wow.
And so that's what you guys did.
That's what we ended up doing. Look at that.
It was fun. And, you know, it kind of pushed things forward. I don't want to say too much because we've recorded ahead, but there's some fun stuff coming up.
Yeah, it's fun stuff coming up. Okay, with that, let's move along. We'll talk more about the next episode next week as we take a little time here for We Are Stupid. Sing us in there, Nicholas Lowe.
We are stupid!
This is something that I think we have a blind spot for. It comes up from time to time, and I'm confident in myself saying I always get this wrong. And now I think, courtesy of Professor Eric, I never will again. I think it has been laid out in a way that
too
makes
bold
sense.
Sticks.
Yes. The only note Professor Eric has on this combat is the concept of the burst. The burst versus the emanation. What makes a burst different from an emanation? Troy. I could not answer this before Professor Eric laid it out.
When I was prepping the Starfinder session that we ran last week, which will air during Gen Con, I was looking this up, and I'm 50-50 if I'm going to get this right, because one is centered on the creature, and one is centered on the intersection of one of the lines of its square.
Right.
So I'm going to say emanation, center of the creature, burst, intersection.
That is correct. Now, you say center of the creature.
Why does it know the rules?
It's not center of the creature as much as it. Well, it, usually emanations do come from a creature, but it's center of the square. Center of a square. Yeah, right. Absolutely. So let's look at a quick visual aid here. If you want to check it out on the YouTubes, you can do so. I'll zoom in here to make it a little easier.
This lays it out nicely.
This is what Professor Eric sent me. You've got the emanations on one side and bursts on the other. And you can see they make a huge difference. Mm-hmm. So a 10-foot emanation, which is what Bless is 15 feet, right? But like an emanation is, Bless is an emanation. So when it comes out from Brother Ramius, it's going out to every square that would essentially be 10 feet away if Brother Ramius was to move 10 feet. You know, it's everything that would cover 10 feet of movement for Brother Ramius, whereas the burst comes on the intersection and essentially is just a box of four squares with two squares to the east, two squares to the north, two squares to the west, two squares to the north, two squares to the east, two squares to the south. So almost like a little plus sign. And what you end up getting with that is less area on a burst, more area on an emanation. Emanations, generally speaking, are generated by creatures. A lot of times you think of them as buffs. Sometimes they're debuffs.
Auras, tend to be
whereas
emanations.
Bursts, most times, are spells you cast at things that have a target area and then they burst. So we have to remember that, especially with something like a fireball, the target is an intersection, not a square. And that does mean it actually will hit less area than it would if we made a square and then everything that's 20 feet from that square it makes it slightly smaller. So, you know, important distinction, and I appreciate that. I don't think I'm going to forget it anymore. Burst is the intersection. Emanation is the creature itself.
You know, and with Foundry, we've been really good about using the templates to drop down. Like, just dropping those on makes it very clear. And this is something we could have done ages ago. But it's just easier in Foundry to drop that shit on there. And you see exactly, like, sorry, you're in the blast. Is that where you want to put it? And I think I've been pretty good about, like, you sure you want to put it there? Because Zephyr's going to be in there. No, let's move it over and you can play with it.
Yeah.
What I was going to say is, like, one thing if you're a large creature, you get extra, right? Like, as you burst, or the emanation is larger.
The emanation
right?
is larger if you're a large creature because you still get all of that juice from the, from your size. Basically, you start further away.
You start further away. Yeah.
Yeah. So here, you can see it here. Here's a large creature, 10-foot emanation. You can see my cursor there. Large creature versus medium creature.
Yeah.
So it's a whole set of squares that are affected that would not be if you were a medium creature.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah.
Very cool. Okay. With that, let's do a quick listener mail as the Naish writes in.
It's a listener mail. Gotta get your brain up on it. Time to listen to me. You gotta cue that fucking shit.
Ooh, We got a quick and a fun one today from Nate
Bargatze.
I don't have a location. Nate. Oh, man. I don't have a location.
Is he homeless?
Nate,
a homeless man sent us listener mail.
Nate from the streets writes in. Nate from the streets. writes in and says, hello, I work with endangered shorebirds called piping plovers. We name all of hold on. I actually
you guys got a good job. Can I get an apartment?
Can I get an apartment? Check this out. This you know this bird. This is a piping plover.
Oh, piping plover, sure.
These little guys that run up by the shoreline, I think, and then they skitter away as the surf comes in. Piping plovers. Nate says, we name all of our adult birds and all the young that make it to a certain age. Last summer, we named one of our adults Lork, and he returned this year to successfully raise 3 chicks. Since they made it to the age where they can survive on their own, it's time to get named, and I figured I would give Joe first naming rights. Pretty much anything is fair game, but Sir Will, Della, and Galabras are all already taken.
Oh, my God.
Best Nate. So I thought I'd throw it out to the two of us to give them 3 names for the young of Lork. But I'll throw one out there right away because I think it's a great bird name. Nico.
Nico. Okay.
I'm going to throw Nico out there.
I thought you were going to say Jason. I'm like, that's going to doom that bird.
No.
Someone's going to cut that bird's head off.
I couldn't do such a thing.
Nico's good.
Yeah. So I think Nico is a good bird name. You got one?
Well, they have to be. The way I'm thinking of this is like sort of figuratively, they have to be your babies. Like if Lork birthed all your other characters, I'm thinking in that sense. So like there is no Nico without Lork. That's the way I'm thinking of this.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Keeping that in mind, I think you need what's your demon's name in Rise of the Rune Lords?
Averxius?
Averxius. Piping plover.
That's amazing. A tiny little bird named Averxius.
What's that bird? Oh, that's Averxius.
Would be amazing if suddenly that bird asserted like a certain sense of dominance. Just like, oh man. What about, this would not be birthed from Lork, but what about Razzmatazz?
You can't beat that for a bird name.
You can't beat Razzmatazz, right, for a bird name?
Yeah, Razzmatazz is fun. Just make sure you spell it right.
Yeah. Is it Razzmatazz or is it Razzmatazz? Is there another
Razzmatazz. Just Razzmatazz, not Reza.
There's no A between the Z's and the M.
No.
Razzmatazz.
And now that I'm saying, make sure you spell it right, I can't remember how to spell it. I know it ends in 2 Z's, but I don't know if there's 2 Z's in the middle or one. I'd have to look back at my notes.
So it's not based on the color?
No. It was just based on random improv.
The color has no A between the Z's and the M's. It's Razzmatazz.
I have it here. It's Raz, Razzmatazz.
And that is how you spell the color. Yeah, Razzmatazz. 2 Z's and 2 Z's. That color, Razzmatazz, is what triggered the whole crown discussion. Somebody sent me a picture of a crown that said Razzmatazz on the side, and it's like a pinkish, mauvish color.
Such classic GCN pant.
And
what's that word you keep using? Someone sent you a physical crown? No, that's a, what do you call them? God, that's so funny.
That's amazing. Nate, thank you so much for naming these endangered shorebirds after Glass Cannon iconic characters. Let's go with Nico
Averxius and Razzmatazz.
Nico Averxius and Razzmatazz. I love it. Sounds good. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. Short one this week as we head out to San Diego Comic-Con. We'll be back in a week. Fear not. We'll be back for... I got to set something here. We'll be back for Gen Con week, of course, as we get pumped for the biggest con of the year, our biggest event of the year. We'll have lots to talk about then. So... check out Glass Cannon Live tomorrow night. Check out Pendragon, part one of the actual story, Friday night. And then, man, you're 1 week away from a metric ton of content dropping every day of the week, all day. Or every day of the weekend, all day. It's going to be great. Until then, take it easy, everybody, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
It's time to make your membership official. Become an official member of The Naish today at jointhenaish.com. That's jointhenaish.com, where you'll get access to exclusive podcasts and live streams you can't find anywhere else. See what everybody's talking about and join The Naish today at jointhenaish.com.